All right, welcome back to In Conversation with University of Manitoba President Michael Benrosh. I'm Michael Alves, and once again joined by the University of Manitoba President Michael Benrosh. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be back.
The first episode was kind of a get to know you. This one, coincidentally, times up with basically the anniversary of the first cases of COVID here in Manitoba and, of course, the first shutdown on campus and in Winnipeg. So we're going to be kind of looking back at the past 12 months. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about where things were at with you, you know, mid-March of 2020. Where were you and what were you up to when the pandemic first came?
I was actually in Toronto, and at the time I was the provost of Ryerson University. And so we started to hear about this in February, and especially end of February, began monitoring it. I will tell you that at the time, you know, my wife and I had been planning a few trips to Winnipeg in the spring to be able to look for a house so we could transition out of Toronto to Winnipeg. So all of that was canceled. And, you know, while I was beginning to start to think about coming to the University of Manitoba, was suddenly faced with the reality as provost of trying to transform another university to go virtual at that time. So it was a bit of a strange time because I had, you know, I'd say my toes in the University of Manitoba and started to kind of turn my thinking towards U of M. But then this real crisis hit in a sense for universities. And, you know, I would say that I completely 100% turned my attention to Ryerson University and helping them make the transition because that's what was needed at the time.
So obviously when you say the transition, that would be to, you know, remote classes and working remotely for staff and things of that nature?
That's right.
Did that experience of you know, gearing up with that at Ryerson translate in terms of what you brought then to working remotely as the president at the University of Manitoba when you did move to our campus?
Yeah, 100%, right? And I mean, I think we've all gone through stages as we've done this. And I know it's been a year, and in some ways it feels like the longest year of our lives. And in another way, it feels like, you know, this just started yesterday. But, you know, I think we quickly all had to learn how to do things virtually, to learn the technology that we knew was there, but didn't really use, and how to be able to lead a group of people in a virtual environment to do some transformative work. And it's, you know, it's not kind of getting together to talk about some peripheral things that maybe need to get done. It's really talking about the fundamental work that we do at a university, the teaching of our students, the research and the governance of the institution, and how all of that was going to work. And, you know, when I've spoken to the provost here, to Janice Ristock and to others, I mean, things were happening in a parallel fashion, and most institutions were going through pretty much the same thing. And so from that sense, I actually think it helped me to have been the provost when the transition happened at Ryerson, so that I was provost and then being able to go into the president's position, because as provost, I was much closer to, you know, the actual transformation of the teaching and the needs that were happening there, because I was speaking to the deans and to department chairs. And so that experience, I think, has really helped me as I've become president.
So in most cases, it was a pretty quick transition. Obviously, lockdowns happened fairly quickly once cases were discovered. In terms of then transitioning to figuring out, you know, classes remotely, delivering education for students and creating a work environment for staff, maybe you can talk a little bit about your experience at Ryerson and you know, what kind of decisions had to be made and how you went about making those.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. And I think the decisions were very similar at the University of Manitoba. And, you know, when it hit in March, the first question was, how do we finish this term? You know, we were so close to the end of the term. We're mere weeks, you know, before the end of the term. And so a whole bunch of decisions had to be made about, you know, how we get technology in the hands of everybody so that we can complete this term. The first thing that we did was really to begin to invest in our teaching and learning office so that it could support the faculty in the transition. You know, I think we had a very different standard for what we expected in March than what we expected in September, because there was virtually no time to do this. A number of universities kind of closed down for a few days to allow faculty to kind of get everything together, you know, but those first decisions was everything's going online. What does that mean? You know, how much of the remaining material is essential to determine that the course was completed? And then how are we going to do exams? Exams, and I will say, exams have remained difficult for both students and faculties through this whole thing. We were all getting to know the technology. There was a lot of decisions needed to purchase technology, Zoom licenses for the whole institution, and the organization Zoom helped. They gave us stuff for free at first. Systems were crashing, and so we needed IT people there. So hiring had to happen there. And then how we were going to set up our staff to work at home. A lot of faculty obviously have laptops and other equipment and, you know, are more used to working at home. A lot of staff weren't used to doing that. And so a lot of decisions had to go in right at the beginning. How are we going to support students? How are we going to make sure that they were all communicated with and everybody knew kind of the new format that was taking place? It was really kind of from scratch, and we had no experience of how to do this, so all of us were kind of in some ways flying by the seat of our pants, but trying to do the best that we could. And so that first round was really getting people through to the end of that term. We had to make decisions, for example, about grading. Students were very nervous. They did not sign up for online courses. They did not sign up for online exams. And so decisions had to be made about how we were going to grade. And a lot of institutions went to pass fail, gave students options of not listing courses on their transcripts, and they would have to take them again if they didn't do well. We had to change dropout dates. We had to change the dates that grades had to be in. So all of those decisions of all the things that we're used to doing had to be changed, and we had to really make those decisions quickly without a lot of experience.
Yeah, I mean, you plunge into unknown territory when you say, you know, not a lot of experience, right? I mean, people had maybe heard of Zoom, but maybe never used a video conference or some software like that. As far as different styles of learning are better suited for this kind of online environment than others, were there considerations given to, you know, accommodation? Like normally some students require, you know, paper materials or, you know, audio only or things like that. Like how did you accommodate students with, you know, different learning capabilities?
So it was very difficult to do at first, because even the ways we accommodate were all geared to the way that we teach and the way we advise students and the types of courses that they take. And, you know, over time, as you know, maybe not so much in your first year, but as you go into second and third year, you start to learn the types of professors you do well in, the environments you do well in. And so you adjust to that also as a student. And we had no time to do that. And I think we struggled at first of how to do that. And the system was a little bit overwhelmed with accommodation requests. One of the interesting things that happened at Ryerson is immediately when we said we're going online, a whole bunch of students dropped courses. And then when we started to roll out how that was going to work and that we were going to have a different way of allowing students to have flexibility on whether they wanted to count a course towards their final grade or not, students started to call us back and say, oh, well, I didn't know that when I dropped out. I really don't want to drop out. I've missed a lecture or two. Can I come back? And so we had to find ways to accommodate even students that had made that decision, because they made it based on incomplete information. And so it was hard. And you know, instructors adapted also. So a lot of them tried to find different ways to grade in their courses to allow for that kind of flexibility that was taking place. And so, you know, I think since then, for example, you know, we had a decrease in first year enrollment at the University of Manitoba this year. I do believe that some of that are students waiting on the sideline who don't feel that they would do that well in a virtual environment. I think students who are already in the system, they just want to continue to go forward and finish. But I think there are students waiting on the sidelines that don't feel that this is an environment that they're going to thrive in. And, you know, it's difficult to accommodate in this current environment where, you know, we are really limited.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, this was, you know, getting through the end of the term was kind of the overriding impetus with the initial decisions and you know, the early days of COVID. At a certain point, though, it had to become obvious. And I mean, obviously, this is when you transition to coming to the University of Manitoba. But the planning for the fall term, you know, fall 2020, and figuring out what to do for, you know, as not just a stopgap measure, but how to kind of deliver things as an ongoing concern. What was the planning process like for you when you came to the U of M and you know, determining that this was going to be how courses happened at the University of Manitoba for this year?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously the summer session was already determined, but, you know, I was spoken to as incoming president about whether I was comfortable first with the fall term and then onwards to go virtual. You know, the people working on this at University of Manitoba did a remarkable job under very difficult circumstances. And so the, you know, our Center for Excellent Teaching and Learning, I think really have been leaders and been very supportive. There was a significant investment put on for them to be able to provide the services that are necessary. And, you know, I think there was a series of committees that have been set up to look at all the different eventualities, starting with our COVID committee, but we have a research committee and there's a health committee. And so, you know, from my perspective coming in as president, you know, things were pretty well in place for the University of Manitoba. Now, I'm not saying that there wasn't challenges, and I'm not saying that it necessarily is where we all want to be. I mean, lots of people, this has been difficult for everybody. Faculty have been working nonstop since last March, transforming the work they do and pretty much putting all their effort into teaching. And there are other parts of their jobs. For students, you know, it's kind of been continual work virtually and the isolation created by that. But I think that we as a university did a very good job, you know, in a limited amount of times using the technology that's available to have our operation continue. And I think it's taken a very large team effort, you know, from everybody across the institution to have done that. And so, I was extremely impressed as to what was in place here when I did start in July. And by the way, I didn't get here until September because of how difficult it was to move across the country at the time. Ontario was locked down much earlier than Manitoba in the first wave. And so I was doing some things virtually for a couple of months before I even got here physically.
Fully remote, being, you know, one province removed.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that because you mentioned, you know, you were about to start house hunting when you, you know, were looking to move and stuff. And so going through a move and relocating, even though it's back to a city you already knew during that time period, what kind of impact did that have on your life and on your family?
It had an enormous impact on us. Everything we had planned, kind of went up in the air. So first and foremost, as I said, we didn't move until September. We didn't find a house we actually found the house 2 weeks ago, just to put that in context of how long it took us to find a house. And so, you know, we ended up finding a furnished townhouse that we're renting now. And so our furniture is in storage. So we had to do all of that. You know, at a personal level, we do have two children who are in Toronto, and we have not seen them since August when we left. This is the longest we've gone. We decided to drive home instead of fly home because we thought that would be safer. And we had to quarantine for 2 weeks when we got here from Ontario. And so we did that. On a personal level, you know, I have a mother in a nursing home. And I saw her a couple of times in September when I returned after my quarantine. But I haven't actually seen her in person since then. We're three brothers in Winnipeg and only two people she's only allowed two visitors. And so that, you know, I drew the short straw. So, you know, and my wife has family here who we go for a walk with every once in a while. We take my mother-in-law a few meals every Sunday and, you know, we were seeing her off of her balcony. And so, it takes a toll on you after a while. And I think we see that for everybody that, you know, you've just had to completely adjust how you normally do things. And, sometimes it really gets to you, but for the most part, it's becoming kind of the norm, but it has been challenging from a family perspective.
Yeah, you had mentioned, I mean, in relation to students and sort of dealing with isolation, I mean, I think that's a universal at this point, not just students who, you know, people of all stripes. In terms of mental health and its impact, has that been something you've addressed? And if so, having gone through it, is that something that you've identified as something to address on the campus?
I mean, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think that was true before COVID. I think we've seen increasing needs for mental health services on campuses across the world before COVID, and you know, that hasn't slowed down with COVID. And you know, I think the isolation is one part of it that has you know, had an impact on students. But I also think the change in format, and we're hearing from students that, you know, that it is stressful to work in this environment, to take exams, you know, with a camera or, you know, with you know, watching you, to change the format of how that's done, to have to work in an environment where there may be other people sharing the space that's not as quiet. You know, all of those things have put stress on students. It's put stress on all of us, and so there's definitely a need for increased mental health services. You know, I've met with our counseling services to talk about. It was one of the things that I thought was really important. I think we're doing a really good job. I think we can always do more and. And apply more services for that. We've had to do it all virtually again also. And again, there's another unit that's transformed themselves to be fully virtual. So whether it's personal counseling, whether it's going to groups, whether it's taking seminars through them, all done virtually. And I think they've done a remarkable job of transforming the work they do and keeping connected to students.
Speaking of transforming, have there been any instances of things like innovations in either class delivery or, you know, how things get done on campus that you've either discovered yourself or heard about that has, I don't want to say surprised you, but heartened you as to, you know, how people are handling things?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, I'm heartened by how committed faculty and staff have been to continuing this process and what we do, in spite of the fact that it's been very challenging. I think that we have expectations on ourselves for quality of teaching, and we really drive ourselves as professors to try to be the best. And I think that changing the way we do that and doing it in this format, which you know, can be very impersonal, is very challenging on faculty members, and the process has exhausted people, and stressed people out. But, you know, I think people have done remarkable work. And so, you know, a few examples in the Asper School, for example, one of the associate deans created a bunch of videos and to try to help faculty members in some of the challenges they may find as they went virtual. You know, so just taking it upon themselves to do just a little bit more. In the Faculty of Engineering, they created lab kits, which they passed out or sent out to their students so that in a safe way, they could do the lab work at home and develop their lab skills. You know, the Faculty of Arts and Science, you know, and we talked about engaging students. They tried to engage students informally and build a classroom community using a gaming platform called Gather Town, which, you know, I think is really innovative way. Our, you know, the hub we created to bring students together institutionally, I think was a creative way of trying to connect students. And the Faculty of Arts and the Desotel faculty, they did a production of a dance and a music video. And I think that We're seeing all of these kinds of innovations arise in the institution, and people are doing these kind of over and above the call of duty. And I think that has to be recognized.
Certainly, yes. Now, I mean, when things first started back in March of 2020, it was kind of, you know, this we'll do this for a short while and we'll see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then it seemed like the darkness remained and we stretched into a longer period of uncertainty. It seems as if there might be some more light. I know that the university announced that there is some resumption of classes for fall of 2021.
Right.
I'm wondering if you can kind of talk a little bit about what you've explained to people, kind of how that's going to be rolled out.
Well, the plans right now, and I always preface everything in COVID by saying right now, because we don't know how it will change. But, you know, assuming the vaccine rollout continues and the vast majority of our population has at least received one vaccine, it's kind of the assumption that we were basing it on. We looked at the fall term. We've decided that the summer term has to remain virtual, but we looked at the fall term and we said, so, you know, let's do this in kind of a stepwise fashion and see how we could start to bring people back safely. I think taking into account, and we've already heard it even with what we've announced to open up, there are people who are worried about coming back. While people want to come back and they want to be in person, they're worried for their health. And we can't discount that. That is a part of all of this. And so what we did is we looked at our university classrooms and we said, how could we bring students back and keep them socially distanced at the distance that's currently required by public health, which is 2 meters. And, you know, in looking at that, I was a bit surprised at how few large classrooms we actually have at the University of Manitoba. And what we decided was that we could do this safely with about a third of our classes, and that would be a limit of about 20 students in a classroom. And that would keep students socially distanced, start to bring them back to the university, and do it in a fashion that was safe. By the way, while it's about a third of our classes at the maximum, if we do all of those, it's not a third. We wouldn't at any time have a third of the full student body on campus because it's not our bigger classes, it's our smaller classes. And so we really kept safety as first and foremost in that process to find a way. We're going to allow for some classes to maybe be split and put some resources into having some sections of classes which are in person also be, if they're a class that may be a little bit bigger, allow some of that to be done outside, so split it into two sections so that students have some choice, so that faculty have some choice. And we'll see that as kind of a first step. And if the vaccine continues and numbers go down and we're safe, then we'll look at opening up more, considerably more in the winter term. But I think we determined that for larger classes, we still not set up in a way that we feel would bring people back safely. And so we determined that this was a pretty good first step. We'll try to do other activities, so labs of 25, but maybe there's other things we can do in person. We're looking at, you know, how many students we can bring back to residences and what that might look like. We're looking at outside classroom activity. What may that look like if we could have other activity off campus? And so looking at bringing this back in a phased-in approach that keeps people safe.
Certainly, of course, all predicated on COVID numbers and vaccine numbers as well.
Absolutely.
So I have to imagine people should just keep their eye on the University of Manitoba social media and on the website as well for updates on these
100%. You know, that again, what we've learned in COVID is you can lay whatever plans you want, but COVID has different ideas of how things will progress.
Well, speaking of things progressing, we do need to wrap up. But before I let you go, I know for me, turning to music was definitely one of the things that's helped me over the past 12 months. I'm wondering if we can close with a song that meant something to you over this past year or maybe helped you get through it at times.
Yeah, you know, I really like Canadian music. And so I have a song. It's by a band called White Horse. Actually, White Horse is two people. It's called Emerald Isle, and there's a connection to Winnipeg. Luc Doucette of the band grew up in Winnipeg, And I think his mother was the director of Sunshine House, which has a special place in the heart of our family. And his brother ran out of Sunshine House a band, which brought in homeless people to play with them. And so the White Horse, I think, is also the last concert I went to in Winnipeg before we left to Toronto. And so now that we can't go to concerts, it has a special place. And so Emerald Isle is a song that I often turn to pick up my spirits.
And fittingly, it's March, so it was the month of St. Patrick's Day earlier.
There you
so
go.
You're tying it all
in. I didn't
in.
Even think of that.
Wonderful. Well, Michael, thanks again for sitting down and being in conversation here on University of Manitoba Radio. And we will talk to you next month.
Take care.
I wait on the Emerald Isle for you to come and rescue me from every step I can't make. Feet, don't you ever break. Drag me over that line. Halfway around the medicine ball is far enough to blow me back like you broke the bank on the ticket worth every damn nickel. Well, you got me that time, 'cause I've been on the road one day too long. Can't hear the record for another sad song. Look at all these faces, can't all be wrong. That's a lot of my heart out there. Come and rescue.